altruism. And it is an old talk. It is actually 25 years old, but it's gone through many changes. The first time I gave the talk was in Louisville, and the one and only time that I was in Louisville. We're going to explore Aquarius primarily through the opposite sign, Leo. And the talk is not really unified. There is not a common theme except altruism that runs through it. But what it is a collection of various thoughts I've had about altruism put together in all in one lump. And it is also not a very profound thought. It's important because it's about living, but there aren't any super deep concepts in it. Now, some of you know, if you know me by now, irrespective of my behavior, I am a moralist. I'm sort of a cosmic moralist. And if you look at my face in terms of physiognomy, I have these jowls like this that usually are the signs of a moralist. They're called Germanic jowls, which the Germans passed on to the English, so you have those jolly moralists in English. No doubt a lot of the moralism is a reaction to my inability to live according to a high moral standard. And it's easier to project morals on other people than it is to live them yourself, but that's what I have to live with. In being a moralist, I do get kind of growly about it, but I'm not quite at the point where I qualify as a Rosicrucian curmudgeon. But I'm getting there. Give me a few years and I'll be the classic curmudgeon. Now, the greater part of the moralistic belief in me is due really to conviction. I'm one of the people that believes that moral and ethical development are foundational. They are essential to any progress in spiritual development. You cannot grow safely and you cannot grow well spiritually unless you first are developing yourself morally and ethically. If we have moral character, it is very easy for us to develop the higher spiritual faculties. Most people cannot be trusted with higher spiritual faculties. If you think about it, one moment of anger could kill several people because the same energy that is used for healing can be used for killing. And that's what we're talking about. I believe that the great spiritual leaders of humanity would love to initiate us and to teach us all about the spiritual powers that we have and how to use them, but it is because of our lack of moral development that we are not there. And this is a general thing for all of humanity. And it doesn't even deal with spiritual powers, because we have atomic bombs that we don't have the moral forbearance to hold back from using. Einstein, who was behind the atomic bomb, became a pacifist in his later life, and he even spoke about working with invisible helpers or beings from the other side. And he said, after many, many years of pondering the unified field theory, he concluded that there can be no advances in physics until there are advances in psychology. And I believe what he meant was that we have to change psychologically the way that we see the world. We do not have enough unity in the entirety of our character to be able to apperceive the unity that would be behind the universal field theory. And something like that is parallel to our moral development. Unless we have that moral development, we cannot unfold the higher spiritual faculties. Now, in the 14th century, there was a German mystic named Meister Eckhart. And he has a quote that I'm very fond of and that I use whenever I can. And he says that one does not see God with the same eye with which one sees a cow. We have to change, and we have to change our consciousness quite radically if we want to see and understand the spiritual world. Now, anyone who has had even a small waking glimpse of the spiritual worlds and saw and sees how much there is there and how chaotic it all is, realizes that it really is something that is disorienting and something that is chaotic. And it takes a long time for a person to become useful as a clairvoyant, because for a long time they are very distorted in their consciousness. So, this sounds like a moralist talk. Eventually we'll get to saying some things. Lack of morality and ethical character is the primary impediment to spiritual development. I can't say it any clearer, any more straightforward than that. Without it, we are likely to egregious errors, destructive errors, because we must remember we're always looking through our own psychology. And when you have inner vision and your inner psychology is not clear and you do not know yourself well, you see in other people what is really in yourself. The phenomenon that psychologists call projection is more than just a psychological activity. It is actually part of the perceptive activity that people talk about, seeing various things in other people's auras that are really within their own. In this whole matter, Christian mysticism agrees with Orthodox Christianity in terms of the basic statement that humanity is in a fallen state. It doesn't take much of a glance of looking into the world to see that purely human contributions to the environment around us are terribly ugly and they're terribly destructive. And it's clear that we violate a lot of delicate balances of nature. And these are all indicative of our fallen state. We've fallen out of harmony with the laws and principles and everything that governs our cosmos. It isn't a matter of how intelligent we are. It isn't a matter of how well educated we are. It is a matter that we don't have the morality and ethics to respect other things in the cosmos. Every advanced being that has come to help us has said exactly the same thing. If we look at the lives of Christ or the life of Buddha, they could have taught us science. They could have taught us food production. They had that kind of consciousness. But what they all focused on was loving one another and being more compassionate toward one another and caring about each other. And if great conscious beings like that look at our life in this way, it seems to be a pretty good indication that it's important, that it is imperative to us to have that kind of consciousness. We have to take it to heart. We have to strive for moral perfection more all the time. And one of the chief things in that is supplanting egoism with altruism. Our thoughts and our desires are very self-centered. And they are selfishly self-centered. And in order for us to have a grand macrocosmic understanding of the world around us, we have to have a moral moral consciousness that is altruistic. So, as we approach the Aquarian age, if we want to be able to do the most that we can for the benefit of people and for the whole ongoing evolution and to do the least destruction, it is important that we work toward altruism. Now, you've just lived through the first introduction. This, when you have talks that are all over the place, there are a lot of introductions. Now, a lot of what is going to be said that follows this is far-fetched, and some of it even seems fantastic. It isn't important that you believe in it. What is important is you can treat it as a story as long as you get the moral of the story. All right, let's go into the first thought on altruism. When I was born, the sun was in the tropical sign Scorpio. And Scorpio represents the creative force that is involved with generation. But because of our fallen state, it often has to do with regeneration. And regeneration in the midst of destruction and elimination. And those are all keywords for Scorpio. Now, in the mid-1960s, I lived in Southern California. And when I had free time, I used to hang out with the Fokies in Mission Beach and sometimes in Ocean Beach. And I had a very dear friend who was a folk comedian from a little town outside of Farmington called St. Paul, Minnesota. Those are actually lines from one of his songs. And he was a Scorpio also, and he practiced elimination and creation in a different way. He used to write most of his songs while he was sitting on the toilet. It was, you know, like the same way that he was eliminating something, he was open for bringing something new in and something creative. Myself, I have been a little bit more extremist and a little bit more radical. During most of my life, I have been a rebel to the core of my being. And I rebelled against every authority, and I rebelled against everything until I was an atheist. And I remained an atheist until I had experiences that proved that I couldn't be an atheist anymore. Now, the bad part of this was I didn't get a very good education because I was always fighting against being educated. But the good part of it was is that I didn't take everything in my education hook, line, and sinker, because all of the people that took it all in and accepted it all and fed it all back, as good students do, basically fell asleep. And if it wasn't for my rebellion, I probably would have fallen asleep also. But rebelling and rebelling until I came into things that I couldn't rebel against is where I was able to get into the life that I finally find myself in now. And so, when we approach new things, as we're trying to approach altruism, we have to be careful that we don't look at them in terms of the old, because the old is authority. The old is ruled by Capricorn and Saturn, and that is the planet that likes authority. And so we have to look at new things all as themselves alone and not with regard to the old. I had an experience with that when the very first times I went across the border into Mexico. I tasted a mango, and not knowing what a mango was, I didn't know how to describe it to people. And I made the fatal mistake of trying to describe the mango in terms of things that I already knew. It was clever enough, but it really wasn't fair to the mango. I said that a mango was a peach that had gone to heaven. And but really, a mango is a mango, and it should be seen for itself. And so we must not rely on the past, but look at things new. So when we're looking at altruism, we have to be careful that we don't take altruism and relate it to other things in the same way that I related mangoes to peaches. And so the first thought on altruism is that altruism is not universal brotherhood. And universal brotherhood is not altruism. In the astrological mandala, which is the horoscope for all of society, brotherhood and altruism are ruled by two different signs and houses. Brotherhood is ruled by Gemini in the third house, whereas altruism is ruled by Aquarius in the 11th house. And though there are parallels between the two of them, and there are similarities between the two of them, there are two very different things. Now, both are lofty ideals, and both of them help people to work harmoniously with each other. But the function of how they operate and why they operate as they operate is very different. And each of them utilizes a different idea. Now, we don't have time to be exhaustive about comparing Gemini to Aquarius, but we can look at a few little things. Gemini is utilitarian. Gemini does practical things. And usually, it is always a reciprocal utilitarianism. It is the function of brotherhoods is to help each other. The principle is usually mercantile in most brotherhoods. And it's based on a principle that we have in folk knowledge where we say, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And there's always a personal benefit, and there is a mutual interdependence when you have brotherhood. And that is an internal necessity. The best internal necessity of reciprocity that is ruled by Gemini is the lungs. We have to breathe out in order to breathe in. And there is that reciprocity of in-breath breathing and out-breathing is absolutely necessary to keep on living. Now, in the human microcosm and in the divine macrocosm, it is also a necessary principle. But it is more a principle that applies to this world than it applies to the other world. When we're speaking about the other world, Christ says, my kingdom is not of this world, and neither is the kingdom of altruism, which is associated with Aquarius. The whole feeling of Aquarius is otherworldly. In horoscopes where there is a lot of Aquarian influence, there is often a desire to go flying off into the inner spiritual worlds and not come back if possible. And there's always some kind of a drive to altruism. There is a quest for freedom. Each of the succedent houses has to do with a different kind of freedom. The second house has to do with financial freedom. If you have money, you can travel, or if you have money, you can buy what the things are that you want, and you're free in a financial way. The fifth house represents freedom of expression. A person who can't pour out their thoughts or their feelings is a person that is imprisoned within their own being. And so when we have the fifth house, we have the whole quality of freedom of expression. The eighth house is a scorpionic kind of freedom. It is a freedom from things. You eliminate things. You get rid of them, especially if you're a mafioso kind of eighth house person. You're free of that person who is your enemy because you have eliminated them. So like when you talk about freedom most often to a Scorpio person that doesn't have the whole horoscope, in their being, they talk about, I want to get rid of that, or I want to be free from that, and I want to be, I want to be my own person away from that all. The last succedent house is the 11th house, which is associated with Aquarius, and that is pure freedom. It doesn't make any difference whether you own things or don't own things. A person who has true freedom is like Aquarius, which is an Aries sign. It is suspended within the possessions that it has. Or if it is a matter of expression, it doesn't have to be me who is expressing. It is someone who is free to express, and not only express in a personal way, but to express in a universal way. And one doesn't have to eliminate something. If you have infinite love of altruism, you don't have to eliminate something to be free from it. You're free in yourself. Yes, you can go flying off into those inner worlds, but you're basically free inside of yourself. Friendship, which is another name for altruism, friendship is offended by pragmatism. We help our friends, and we call on our friends for help, but the relationship is not based on pragmatism. Because if it's based on pragmatism, it isn't friendship. Altruistic love is given freely. And if it isn't given freely, it isn't altruistic love. It's, in this regard, altruism is almost impossibly otherworldly. Now the 11th house is the house of utopianism. And that was a word that was coined by Plato that means nowhere. And Plato was one of those Aquarians that was otherworldly. By utopianism, you mean something that is done for its own sake. Art for art's sake. Or doing good for the sake of doing good. All of those do-good organizations like the Temperance Union, and all of those are Aquarian organizations, or 11th house organizations. I had a very dear friend named Daisy Lamberti, and she belonged to so many of those organizations. It was unbelievable. So we can see that there is something in the principle of Aquarius and in altruism that lifts us above pragmatism, which is not to say that pragmatism is bad. You know, this world is important, and it has functioning well in this world is necessary before we can move into the inner worlds. But the simple fact is that there is something about Aquarius and altruism that is otherworldly. Now, one of the key points in this is that with Aquarius and with altruism, we have the opportunity of being self-forgetting. That's what we learn in friendship. We forget about ourselves for the sake of our friends. So as we said, this is actually the Leo talk, and let's talk about something that is very Leonine that both Plato and Gurdjieff love to talk about, and that was from the opposite sign Leo, and that is self-remembering. Now, Plato is very much misunderstood, especially by the academics. They miss all of the mysticism in Plato, and even some of the Platonists miss some of the mysticism in Plato. There's loads of things in Plato to be harvested in terms of in terms of mysticism. But Plato had the doctrine that all education was remembering. And since he does talk about past rebirths in other times, the scholars believe that he's talking about all education is remembering something that you learned from a past life, which is an outlook that it has to be fallacious, because if you learn all your things in your past life, then you wouldn't learn anything new in this life. But the idea that education is remembering is misunderstood. Now, Plato's theory of education is given in a dialogue called the Meno. And in the Meno, Socrates takes a young boy, probably a youth, a teenager, and he carries him through a proof of a geometric theorem that the boy never knew. And the boy gets the theorem right. He hadn't studied the geology. But what happens is,